This is Primetime on KTEP, a program that focuses on economic development, mobility, security, and quality of life issues in El Paso and surrounding areas.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of El Paso Primetime. I'm your host, Richard Dayoub, Thunderbird Management Consulting. And today, I have a dear, longtime friend. Notice I didn't say the word old, because only one of us qualifies for that. A dear friend, Ms. Jackie Butler, who is Commissioner Butler, Commissioner from Precinct 1 for El Paso County. Welcome, Jackie. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for welcoming me back.
You bet. So we have a lot to talk about. You're now finishing up your first year.
Yep.
So we have a lot to cover. Maybe we could begin with, as much as you're comfortable sharing, what life has been like being a public servant now, serving as commissioner for Precinct 1, and all that goes with it.
You know, it's been a really busy year. And so I don't know that I've really had the opportunity to stop and take stock of or reflect on what it's been like. But it's very much what I imagined it would be, right? I went into a campaign and an office with eyes wide open about what I hoped to accomplish, the kind of commissioner that I hoped to be, the kind of relationship I wanted to foster with my precinct and the communities that I serve. And looking back, I think that I've really been able to do a lot of that in a positive way. But it has been overwhelming in a good sense, right? It's definitely been a change of pace for my life. My job is now my life in every sense of the word. I do get stopped at my local grocery store and by neighbors who wanna.
I'm laughing, but I'm not laughing at you.
Yeah.
I'm appreciating your situation.
Yeah, and that's what I expected. That's the kind of public servant that I want to be. I want to be accessible. I want to be able to help people who I'm able to. And that just means, you know, being on all the time, being as involved as possible, while also being productive. And that means like doing the policy work and being strategic about things that I want to move forward on Commissioner's Court, making sure I have the support for those things. So it's all encompassing. And I'm really happy to be in the position.
Yeah. So I'm smiling for the benefit of our listening audience because I've worked with you for so many years and watched you being the dedicated person you are when you were with me at the chamber, overseeing all government relations and how detail-oriented you were, which certainly was a great sort of proving ground for you because you dealt with them all, the good, the bad, right, the ugly, and the indifferent. And everything in between. But you also had a great training ground at the county working for Commissioner Leon, your predecessor.
Yes.
Great guy to start with, also a great leader. Yes. And so you had that opportunity.
I did.
And what was that like?
So I tell people all the time that my time at the chamber really, really prepared me for public office because there, we were registered lobbyists, right? So we were on the other side. We were the ones coming to commissioners asking for support for initiatives. And so my expectations when it comes to policy work are very high because I hold myself to the standards that I held elected officials when I was lobbying them, which is high. And so I know how intensive that work is on the policy side. Working with Commissioner Leon for 2 years really, really was peering behind the curtain, watching how he led on Commissioner's Court, how he interacted with stakeholders, you know, how he really prioritized constituents and helping people really helped me be able to prioritize those things too, because he's a great leader and I want to emulate him as much as possible.
Well, I would agree with you on all the points you made. And I think it's important to mention that your role as commissioner for Precinct 1 also has a special moment because I believe you're the very first person for Precinct 1.
Yes.
that comes from Precinct 1, specifically in your area that you live?
Yes. So I'm born and raised in Montana Vista and still live there now. And as far as I know, the research I've done, I'm the first county commissioner from Montana Vista. It's a colonia on the far east side of El Paso. You know, my parents moved out there in the 80s, and so I consider myself second generation Montana Vista resident. It's a fairly new community, considering it's been around since maybe the 60s and 70s, but it's grown a lot since then.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. It was actually tied into my next comment to you / question. And first of all, I think from what I've seen of you and your work at the commission for this last year, you're striving to do some things out in that area that will be able to, at someday in a not too distant future, list your area without the word, without the descriptor, colonia.
Yes. Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because there are several things you've been working on that are critical.
Yeah, and so Montana Vista is, I consider primarily the unincorporated area of El Paso County in Precinct 1. So in Precinct 1, there's only the city of El Paso and unincorporated El Paso County. There are no other municipalities in there to work with or move things forward with. And so the needs of unincorporated El Paso County in areas like Montana Vista are really extensive. And we can start from the basics, which is water and wastewater. There are still thousands of residents in Montana Vista, which I like to remind people is not rural El Paso County. This is suburban El Paso County, pretty dense neighborhoods where people have lived for decades that still don't have access to water or wastewater. And there's a reason for that, and it's because water and wastewater are incredibly expensive.
Yep.
And infrastructure. We don't have the benefit of other parts of the state where people can drill their own wells here and live off of those. And so if people don't have access to piped water and wastewater and that infrastructure, they don't have access to water. And so we have thousands of residents living right next to the city-county line that have to haul water to their homes every week and buy bottled water to drink. That's still happening here. And, you know, in neighborhoods that we see every day.
In the 21st century in North America.
Yes.
It's pretty astounding.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what I wanted to mm-hmm. ask you about. And I'm not trying to put you on the spot. What kind of plans do you have in the foreseeable future to remedy that situation?
Well, this past year alone, I was really happy to be on Commissioner's Court when the court decided to pass some certificates of obligation early in the spring. The majority of which that funding will go towards first-time water and wastewater. A big portion of that funding is going to go towards a project in Montana Vista that has been living without water and wastewater access for decades. So really happy to be able to allocate some funding towards that. Additionally, the times that I've been able to spend in Austin this year, which have been a few, I've prioritized going and talking to the Texas Water Development Board to better understand their process for grants for communities. And, you know, the majority of the funding that the county gets for water and wastewater infrastructure does come from the state and federal government. Fortunately, the federal government, just like everywhere else, is cutting their funding for water projects, especially in communities like El Paso. And so we're going to be relying more heavily on the state for funding. But again, water infrastructure is incredibly expensive. It is, you're talking, you know, $100,000 for 500 feet of water lines, just water. And so, you know, when we're talking about whole neighborhoods or subdivisions,
many millions of dollars.
Many millions.
Yeah.
And to address the issues that we have, even just in Precinct 1, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in water infrastructure funding. And so I've really been working with our public works team to understand what their planning process is like, how they prioritize projects countywide, make sure that I do my part to advocate for those projects that are needed in Precinct 1 to elevate them when necessary, and making sure that we have a grant plan for each of those and that we're being as aggressive as possible, because that's where the majority of the funding is going to come from. Our COs and our local debt capacity can only manage so much funding at a time, and they're not very popular, unfortunately, because counties don't have a lot of resources to fund infrastructure, but where the infrastructure needs are most are within the county. And so we just have to be really aggressive with the state about our grant applications.
Well, thank you. That was the Hillcrest Water Project you were referring to.
Yes.
And as we, of course, we always have more to talk about than we have time to discuss. So I want to make sure you have the opportunity to share some of the other information that you shared with me before we went on the air with our audience. And you talked about several things, but I'll let you prioritize them.
So on infrastructure, in addition to water projects and making sure that at the very least we have a plan for addressing all of the water needs in my precinct, I've also been able to allocate more funding for streetlights, which is something that seems very basic, but does cost money for the county to install. In these areas like Montana Vista, the majority of Montana Vista is still dark. And one of the things that I said when I first came into office was that we should have streetlights at our mailbox clusters because people in Montana Vista don't get mail delivered to their homes directly. And we don't have lighting at our mailbox clusters. So people can't either, they go get their mail in the dark. I see people with their like flashlights on their cell phones getting their mail at night, which is a safety concern for a lot of people. So they have to wait until daylight to get their mail, which it seems like an easy fix. Let's install streetlights at the mailbox clusters. To credit our public works team and our county administrator, they said, yeah, we can do that. No problem. Let's add it to our streetlights plan. And so things like that, I'm really happy to be in this position to just ask what can be done to address some of these issues. And sometimes, luckily, there's a quick solution to them. So we do have a capital plan for funding streetlights over the next 5 years, and we're going to be able to do a lot of that in Precinct 1. And then on top of those infrastructure issues, which require planning and funding, I'm really also really proud to just bring some community engagement to that area, which I believe has been critically underserved by government for a really long time. And it's not anybody's fault. I just think representation really matters. And not having anybody who has been able to represent that area from that area has gone overlooked for a long time. So I've focused a lot on making sure that I have community meetings out there, that we engage as many community members as possible, that we have events. So for the first time ever, we've had simple things like an Easter egg hunt and a turkey drive, and we're doing a Christmas event there in our one county park in Precinct 1. And it just, those small things make a huge difference to a community that's never had it before. And so I'm really happy to be able to invest a lot of time and effort into those.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And just for the benefit of those who are not familiar as much with Precinct 1, it's a pretty large precinct that you cover.
It is.
You know, just generally speaking, if you could just give them as an idea, you know, what the borders are that look like for your precinct versus the other three precincts.
Yes. So it's east and far east El Paso. But when I say far east, people think like East Lake and Horizon, and that's not it either. So the easiest way that I've learned to describe Precinct 1 is by naming the high schools that are in it.
that's an El Paso tradition.
Yes, it is. And also saying it's all north of I-10. So all of Precinct 1 is north of I-10, and it includes most of Fort Bliss. All of the open training land of Fort Bliss is within Precinct 1. The high schools are starting from the western boundary, Eastwood, Hanks, Montwood, Americas, El Dorado, Pebble Hills, and Mountain View High School. So
it's a lot.
It's a lot, and it expands all the way to the county line near Waco Tinks. And so there's a lot of – it's varied. It's one of the densest zip codes in the county, 79938, is all within Precinct 1. And then you have Fort Bliss, and you have Open Desert and Red Sands and Waco Tinks. I love the diversity of it, but it is a lot.
Yeah, and you just triggered a thought when you mentioned Red Sands.
Yes.
Because back to my college days, we used to go out there with our off-road vehicles and our motorcycle, our dirt bikes, and race around in the Red Sands back when it was pretty safe to do.
Right.
These days, you have a different element. And so that presents you with a little bit more of a challenge.
It has been. It has been challenging, at least over the last several years. You know, I Googled Red Sands when I was doing a project with Commissioner Leon, and all of the top news headlines were deaths, accidents leading to deaths, shootings, violence, more accidents, and more deaths. And unfortunately, I think that Red Sands has become, I call it the Wild West, the real Wild West. There are zero regulations, zero public infrastructure, zero ways for us to manage it in any meaningful way or even to police it for safety because it is such a challenging terrain. And I remind people every chance that I get that Red Sands is all privately owned. It's private owners. There's a lot of them. There's over 30 people who own parcels of property within Red Sands. I don't know why they own it. They can't. It's not developable because the dunes are there. It's natural occurring sand dunes. And because it's privately owned, we have a really hard time policing it, being able to proactively police it. So whenever the inevitable happens that there's accidents, people go out there and they're drinking and driving ATVs and quads and four-wheelers and trucks. It gets really dangerous really quickly. So one of the things that I'm really happy to have done is partner with the sheriff, our sheriff Oscar Ugarte, and thankfully he's been a great partner in at least in the really high traffic times, which we know is like 4th of July and after Thanksgiving. He has put active operations out there. So over 30 deputies into Red Sands and for the first year in many years, we haven't had any fatalities there during those times. And so I think it's successful and hopefully that can continue to happen.
I would agree with you. We're all hopeful for that. And I thank you for what you and Sheriff Ugarte are doing because it's an important part of the community that most of us don't think about unless we're going out there to entertain ourselves. And that's when it becomes vivid instantly.
Well, and people live there, which is what I try to remind people, right? And I live near there. So I see the ATVs and the razors and that kind of traffic. And if it impacts me and I'm miles away from Red Sands, imagine how the people who live directly near it feel, especially when people go out there to shoot guns and drink and drive and things like that.
All positive things to mix with alcohol. I'm being facetious for those who can't tell.
And going back to what we always worked on at the chamber, which is having headlines like another death at Red Sands does nothing for economic development for our community. And so any way that we can prevent those kinds of things and those headlines from happening, the better off we all are.
So before this show ends, I know there's a couple of really critical things you want to talk about, including the steps recently taken, thanks to your leadership through the commissioners, with regard to fire safety.
Yes. So one of the other things that I think, unless you live there, it's really easy to not know that it's an issue. But in unincorporated areas of El Paso County, we have a really big issue with outdoor businesses like junkyards and scrapyards and salvage yards. the efforts that I've been working on this year were triggered 2 years ago when I was in Commissioner Leon's office, and there was a big fire at a recycling plant, outdoor recycling center in Montana Vista. That was an especially egregious case because that particular property had caught on fire multiple times over the last decade. It was notorious for catching on fire, not just on its own, but because every time it caught on fire, there was a track record of our public works team writing them up and giving them a warning. So they would go, somebody would complain about the piles of trash they had on their property. Our public works team would go cite them, give them 30 days to fix it. And then like clockwork, there would be a fire. And so we can't prove anything, but it was egregious enough to say, this has happened too many times at the same property. And it was a property, because the county doesn't have zoning authority, that was surrounded by residential properties. So people live near a property that keeps catching on fire. Big fires, dirty fires, fires where we don't know what is actually within those property limits. And so I was really happy to be able to move a policy forward that would give the county more authority over those types of outdoor businesses. Again, counties in Texas don't have a lot of authority, statutory authority at all.
Unlike municipalities. Cities.
Right, right. Municipalities do have zoning and code enforcement. The counties don't. And so whatever I searched Texas state statutes and looked for any authorities that we have. I looked at what other counties do, and there is an ability to have an ordinance around specific outdoor businesses. Again, junkyards, salvage yards, scrap yards, those kinds of places. And so we have now an outdoor business ordinance that's in place as of October. I'm really excited to move that forward. But in conjunction with that, we also were able to move forward a countywide fire code, which hasn't existed before. When we were looking at outdoor business orders and how to monitor more proactively these types of businesses, we found that any county that did have an outdoor business order also had a countywide fire code. And beyond that, that El Paso County is the only county out of the 15 largest counties in the state that does not have a fire code. So we started asking other counties, you know, why did they establish it? How did this come about? And it really is a key lever for being able to implement some standards for operating for especially these kinds of businesses that could potentially cause harm to neighboring communities. And so it is something that we saw was a huge gap in our ability to enforce statutes around fire safety. Right now, we rely on our emergency services districts to be our fire marshals for unincorporated areas of El Paso County, and we don't have a mechanism countywide to be able to implement those. And more than anything, what the fire code does allow us to do is activate our county attorney's office on any businesses that are violating a fire code. And so there are a lot of benefits for the county having a countywide fire code, and I'm really happy that we were able to move that forward this year.
I was thrilled to be there and support this effort. I know it wasn't an easy one to get across the finish line. I won't go into the details. We don't have the time to discuss it anyway, but I really want to congratulate you on that. And for our listening audience, just imagine, why is it that those facilities, those so-called outdoor businesses, don't necessarily exist within the city limits?
Right.
Because they do have zoning capabilities. And so if you have a residential area with an open piece of property, a large piece, you can't do that in the city because they won't approve you. So they go outside the city into what's known as the extraterritorial jurisdiction, the ETJ, and do these kinds of things. Sometimes legitimately, because that's just the kind of business they're in.
Right.
Unfortunately, too many go out there for the wrong reasons, because nobody is going to hold me accountable. And so thank you for doing that. I appreciate it. In the few minutes that we have left, maybe you could highlight one or two other things that you'd like our audience to know about your organization and what you're doing.
I'm looking forward now. We're doing, you know, we're looking at all of the things we were able to accomplish in year one and now focusing our attention on what's next. And I can tell you a couple of things that we're working on in my office are focused primarily on economic development. So now that we have some of the basics, you know, covered and ongoing projects that are going to be moving forward throughout this first term in office, we have more bandwidth to focus on how do we bring more jobs to the Far East Side, to Precinct 1? How do we bring higher education to Precinct 1? Because currently none exists there. And how do we deal with emerging economic development issues that our county and public, our local government is grappling with, like data centers, right? How am I preparing myself and researching the impact of data centers? What is it going to mean for our community moving forward? What are the economic benefits? And how do I communicate that to constituents who might be impacted? I don't know that data centers are coming after Meta. Meta is a big project that obviously I wasn't on court for when the court voted on that. I've seen enough and I've talked to counties around the country that say once you get one data center, there are more after them.
There usually are.
And so I want to be as prepared as possible to make sure that we have those conversations, not just in commissioner's court and with our economic development organizations, but with the community as well. And so really focusing on economic impact, right? Because we all talk about economic development all the time and what we have to do to bring higher paying jobs. I'm really focused on how does economic development translate to impact and actually bringing those opportunities and jobs to the people that I serve in Precinct 1.
The other aspect is many of these multinational corporations actually are trying, as they come into communities, to say, well, what can we do to help offset some of the impact we're having, negative impact? And that might be an opportunity for some of these companies to support the initiatives that you have and the other commissioners with regard to such infrastructure as you just described. But again, we're out of time.
Yeah.
For those of you who may have tuned in just a moment or two late, we are interviewing Commissioner Jackie Butler, and she's a county commissioner for Precinct 1 on the Far East Side of El Paso in the Montana Vista area. And we thank you for being on the show again, Jackie, and we wish you continued success in your role. And hopefully it'll be a good thing for you in terms of stress and you'll be able to manage that because I know there's a lot on your plate. So we really thank you for coming on the show today. Look forward to working with you and getting you back on in the future as big issues come up that the community is concerned about. We'd love to have
that.
You. So thank you for being
thank
on the show.
Thank you for the time. I'm happy to be here anytime.
Glad to have you. Ladies and gentlemen, by now you're familiar with my routine. I'm reminding you that you're listening to KTEP. This is an NPR station. We're public media broadcasting from the University of Texas at El Paso, nonprofit. If you're a member, thank you. If you're not yet a member, we're going to make it so easy for you. Just go to our website, ktep.org, click on the donate button, be generous, support us, become a sustaining member as I am. You can modify that contribution upward or downward based on your economic situation at any time. But we certainly need your help now more than ever. And with that, I will wish you a very happy new year. God bless all. Thank you and have a great Saturday.
El Paso Primetime is a production of KTEP. Views expressed by the host and guest don't necessarily reflect those of KTEP. For inquiries about our public affairs programming, email ktep@utep.edu. Richard Dayoub appears courtesy of Thunderbird Consulting. The producer and editor is Daisy Morales. The show is recorded at the Communication Department at the University of Texas at El Paso. To learn more about the program or to listen to past episodes, visit ktep.org.